this is down to brass tacks. I think it's important that we take this matter very seriously, the matter relating to having public bathrooms in our capital city, which is a UNESCO-designated site, Bridgetown and its garrison. I think it's high time that we do bring attention to the need for public facilities, whether it is jointly shared both by the public and private sector, but it is something that is well needed in the city. Too often you have to, most people pop into Cave Shepherd and they pay their 25 cents. I think the price had gone up to $1 or something in order to use the restroom, and the facility is there. But we could also have either a few of those in a few of the larger stores where you pay a little something to mean so that it can be maintained, or a public one where you pay a 25 cent as well equally, and but the facilities must be there. And I think that would reduce the bad behavior on the part of males of urinating in the street, one, and two, it would allow more persons to want to come to Bridgetown because they have a facility for restoration, you know, wash your hands and do those things that are necessary. And a lot of our stores in Bridgetown, you go there, you ask to use a bathroom, and they say, oh, we don't have toilet facilities. But if you don't have toilet facilities and you have people playing using your, buying stuff from your store or whatever, I think that some people have a right not to purchase from you if you don't provide that facility. But if you put a little something along with your other store owners along and have on that street, at least there's a public bathroom on each street, I think it would all go well for you, because I'm one of those customers. I get very annoyed if I can't use a bathroom in a public facility, in a particular place if I'm playing my trade. Down to brass tacks, you're on the air. Good morning.
Good morning, how are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Okay, fine. Sorry about that. This mini budget, I'd like to make a comment or two on it. It's described as a mini budget, but I think it's mini by name, but not in nature at all. Because the previous budget, the nine budgets that the former administration brought, they didn't have anything to tax the brain, really. Because you could just look at it in a flash and do analysis on it. But this one, I find it so taxing.
So it took you two weeks to come on here and talk about your findings?
Yeah, and I even really get to all. It sucks, but I believe I can still bring a little bit of perspective to it. Now, obviously, some things jump out at you here. I think it's very, very, in fact, I would describe it as a creative stimulus budget, many and all of it, as it was described. Now, when you look at it, the Prime Minister said it was aimed at significantly improving the country's fiscal deficit in the shortest possible time, and economic growth in 36 months. The net impact of the mini budget is to reduce the fiscal deficit in a year by $182 million, lowering government's recurring expenditure by March next year. Now, obviously, it cut government spend by $214 million. New capital expenditure for this year will be now $134 million, and net revenue $150 million. Now, over the last 10 years, we had nine budgets, because they didn't bring a budget, I think it was in 2014 or something like this.
It was right? It was a statement by the minister.
No, he had his statement in 2013. That was when he was going to borrow the money from the Swiss bank loan. But yeah, but it's the year that he had a budget. I think it was the next year, if I'm mistaken. Mm-hmm. But the year he had
it was a budget, though. It was a statement of financial and budgetary proposals.
There were nine budgets in a 10-year period, right? So he missed one, I'm sure. But anyhow, they collected $22 billion in taxes. But you know what is significant to me? They have not given back the people of Barbados not even one brown mint for all those taxes. But this mini budget right? This mini budget had delivered hundreds of millions of dollars and benefits to individuals and others, right? A further hundreds of millions of dollars indirectly to others, and another hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And capital works program. This is significant. That's why I said it's also, it was called a stimulus, but I know sometime I'm going to tell you that the only way this country will get out of the hole that it's in, a stimulus has to come. Because that you had all austere budgets previous to this. Now, if you look at it quickly here, you can see there were about 11 instances when you had direct returns to individuals. I will just quickly mention the 11. But then you also had, if you look at it, another 20 indirect initiatives that was also given to, like, improved services, capital works program, and things like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's very creative, as I said, where that the Prime Minister, didn't only pass the burden on to the Barbadians, but to the tourism and thing with the airline tax, the rooms and things like that. That collected $154 million in revenue. As I said, the expenditure was cut by basically $215 million. There, yeah, you took BTMI and BTPA right off of the out of the consolidation fund, SSA and the QEH. Very creative again. But I would just like to quickly mention the 11 that it's important to realize this. Now, she's given back 5% across the board in increased wages and salary. That's $60 million, right? Mm-hmm. Non-contributory pension from $155 to $225, really that's $20 million. Tuition fees to UV students, $22 million. A trust loan, $5,000 each to read it to the entrepreneurs, $10 million. Safety, you got safety officers and additional social workers and guidance counselors for 7 secondary schools from next school year.
Pilot.
Then you also,
as a pilot, so it will extend beyond that the following year.
Right. And then you got a system of master teachers and senior specialist nurses. It's $5 million. The opening hours extended to 24 hours at the Randall Phillips and the Sylvester Scott, $3 million. 3 temporary judges assigned to the Supreme Court, $700,000. 9, the sugar farms received an initial payment of about $5 million. 10, property in relation / welfare support for further 3. And then you got the elimination, the said pit dollars, which was quite mentioned for you. That's $10 million. I don't really like to go into all the others for the thing, but all the others, but the point is, another important point is, previously when this government, the former administration used to bring taxes, it used to all go into the consolidated fund, and then the people will not get back, specifically those results. But all of these that were mentioned, they were earmarked for specific reasons. They were earmarked for specific reasons. Like, you could look and see, obviously, what the government is doing currently. Now, there's a little thing here that I find a little people have a little problem with the removal of the rural taxes. Now, if you look at this in the 2017 budget, the government brought $291 million in NSRL. The 2%.
No, they're projected to get 291.
Remember
when the minister, he reported he had only gotten $52 million by the end of that said year.
Serve him right. Because he couldn't get any more when he overtaxed people for all these years. But I was talking about the projection, actually. And then the 2% foreign exchange, $140 million, excise tax for $50 million. And you don't hear the Barbadians say anything. They don't get about anything, as they keep saying. Now, up from 2010 to 2018, the same former administration had cess on fluid, right? Mm-hmm. But basically, they collect, what we say, annually $30 million for the 8 years. That would have been $240 million in tax. That, before any specifics, before going to anything specific. Also, the people in Barbados must understand, in 2007, the rural tax brought in $32 million. By 2011, it reached $65 million. So I'm saying, and you also have 15,000 people using the roads before paying road taxes. So I'm saying this is a more equitable way of collecting taxes. You could call it taxes, you could call it cess, in order to pay for the road taxes. So I don't see what is a really big issue that people are, well, I guess you have to raise issues, but I don't really think it's a big issue. But the budget was very, very, very creative.
You're stealing my word, because I was told it's not creative.
It is very creative. But I actually was saying the word even before I hear you saying it. But it's very creative budget. Because as you said, the way how she could then like take the BTMI and BTPA, SSA and QEH off, form the consolidated fund, and then put a lot of collect revenue from the airlines and routes. That's very creative.
That leaves to be seen is the actualization of it now, and then the implementation of a lot of these same proposals and measures, because we always know the proof is really in the pudding. Just like how we said you would get a certain amount from the NSRL, and then we didn't realize that. We now have to see whether or not the funds, particularly for the tourism, because that was the one that I was particularly interested in,
yes.
The funds, whether those funds can be realized. What if we have a scenario where there is a not really a mass exodus, but Barbados then becomes uncompetitive and persons choose to go elsewhere? We can have a significant fall in revenue, and the projection that we had made originally not be realized, and that anticipated revenue is lost, and then we have a damage to that same agency, because the funds are really supposed to man the running of the agency. If we don't get those funds in, we can have a challenge. So we now have to ensure that there's real and proper implementation of these said proposals that have been put in the economic statement.
But you could see the implementation right before your eyes in 4 weeks, like at the South Coast or project. You know, you can see implementation. You can see the implementation. How the Prime Minister met, the government met with the IMF, and also the OEDB. You can see the thing they're rolling out. And I don't think people will move away from Barbados because that you put a little bit on their rules. Because that Barbados primarily is a high-end tourist destination. I think the former administration met.
I disagree with you there. We have varying pockets. Yeah, we have a mix.
Yeah,
we do have. We fall in the category of the high, and we also fall in the category of the mid range.
Yes, mix is the best word to use.
Yeah, mix for sure.
But I find that the mistake that the previous administration have made, they basically, when they came into office in 2008, to my mind, in fact, the records say they actually went into Brazil and they were targeting low-end markets and basically didn't pay enough attention to the British market. And once that, the last couple of years, you see they pay more attention to the British in particular market, you have seen that. That's how their numbers then start going back, their numbers went back up.
So we had external factors that also influence these tours coming to Barbados. Bear in mind that they themselves had some economic challenges. When they came into office, that those persons were only targeting. You just said when this last administration came into office, they came into office in 2008.
Yes.
And if you look at the figures,
yes.
we had a crisis that was impacting North America, and the UK visitors started to decline. The number of tourists arrivals that we had from
I asked you the period.
Right, and I'm telling you the 2000. Look at 2000. No, I'm talking about the period you just called when they came into office. They came into office in 2008. So look at 2008, 9, 10.
I could prove to you, right? Mm-hmm. I could prove to you. I don't have the information with him. But I could prove to you when Barbados tourism were indeed struggling, the rest of the region were doing well. Because it was, this is really, really, really a paradox. When Ms. Theresa Seeley was the chairman, I think, is the chairman of the Tourism Caribbean. I think he was the chairman at
the time. Who was it? Richard Seeley was the minister of finance. No, he was minister of tourism.
He was the tourism at the time. But he was the regional, called it his go-around from
CFTA.
Ireland. He was the chairman then of the Caribbean Tourism. And when he said...
CHTA, actually.
Yeah. He said...
No, but that's in... No, he became chairman in the second phase of the previous administration, not in the first phase.
No, I know. I'm aware of that.
Right. But you're talking, aren't we talking about 2008 and 9 and 10 when we had the financial crisis?
But Barbados tourism problem went on long after that.
I understand
tourism
that. But I understand that. But we were talking, you asked me which period, and we were speaking of a specific period. Now you've moved on to something else.
No. Let me clarify that. In the initial period called the world recession lasted only from 2007 to 2009, you know. When this government, when the same Mr. Seeley and the former prime minister were blaming the...
You're changing the subject on me. We're not
I'm
there.
Not, I'm not.
I'm just not, trying to establish if Barbados did not see a fall in our visitors from the UK in the 2008, 9, and possibly 10 period.
But
I thought you were going to the statistics to verify
that. I could agree with you with that. I could agree with that. But beyond in 2012, by 2012, for sure, the rest of the tourism in the rest
Caribbean,
of the Caribbean.
Yeah, they were seeing some increases.
Yes.
And we were having challenges.
Yes.
But remember, we had the APD, the pending APD.
But it would affect the other Caribbean countries as well.
Mm-hmm.
But at that time, what happened with Barbados tourism? As I said, they virtually ignored the traditional markets at that time, and they went after low cost destinations and low cost aircraft carriers. That's how that their focus. But it's only then recently, in very recent time, that they started looking back at British market.
So I'm not overly privileged with the strategy, the full strategy of the tourism app. Someone here is asking you what are your thoughts of the implementation of the IMF structural program based on what can happen, the potential, in light of the recent budget?
For the implementation?
Mm-hmm.
When you go to the IMF, you will go to how the current prime minister went to the IMF
with a homegrown program merely to get some assistance.
Exactly. You will not just go with an empty sheet. You will not just go with an empty sheet and let them implement what they want to implement. It will not have a major impact on Barbados. Going to the IMF because she spent virtually IMF is in agreement with her, the IADB. When you could put your proposals and said, this is what I'm going to be doing, and she, as the Prime Minister said, I have this one because they have agreed you cannot build back a country or you cannot have a country functioning with infrastructure, its people, everything down the ground. You have to build out the infrastructure. You have to get the people. You can't have people working for 10 years before expenditure gone up to about over 50%. People have not gotten a raise. So the IMF policies will not. It is the Barbados policies that they give to the IMF. Instead, these are the things that we propose.
Okay. Are you hurricane ready on Down to Brass Tacks? We want you to be hurricane ready, Lisa Gale. This is Down to Brass Tacks, 11:42 a.m. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yes, good morning.
Yes, I was wondering if the land in White Hill, if it is slipping, if it would be better to move everybody I was hearing about the price tag, it would be expensive, but I don't think that money has anything to do with people's lives. If his land is slipping, my opinion is, it should move everybody.
If it is slipping, if indeed it is slipping, I don't know if you were privy to page 3 of Today's Nation, where the MP was suggesting that it is something that is fixable based on the commentary and feedback from the specialist. So in his suggestion, based on it being fixable, it would be more advantageous to just fix the road so that those 50 householders don't have to deal with dislocation, etc., coupled with the fact that the price tag will be pretty high.
No problem. If the road is fixable, if the land is on, if the houses are on good soil or good footage, mm-hmm. I have no problem with that. Mm-hmm. That's all I was concerned about.
Yeah, that's a good point. If it is fixable, and that has to be the operative word, if it isn't fixable, then you definitely should look at relocation, because people's livelihood or people's lives should be the first and foremost thought for any minister or for any ministry, for that matter.
Right. And you know, you will have some person saying they don't want to move. If it was him, I would let them say, if you don't want to move, you will send something saying you don't want to move. So that at the end of the day, you can't
the risk is at you, yes. If it is. Yes. Indeed.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. This is Dr. Brass Stacks. Good morning. We go until 11:55 before the roundup. Good morning. Dr. Brass Stacks, can you hear me? Okay, so please tell the Stacks man, good morning, ma'am. Please tell the Stacks man that he's done a good job for the BLP, and it has been well appreciated. He should take a well-deserved break and let the government now establish itself and carry out its mandate. The country will decide if it will run well for the next 5 or 10 years. I'll make a comment on that. And I have seen quite a bit of persons, both on WhatsApp and other places, comment on other callers. I think that we must understand that everyone is entitled to his or her own opinion, and each person is entitled to his or her own opinion. People will make contributions, some of which you share, some opinions for which you share, some you don't. But I think the variety and the difference of opinion and those things help make the program what it is. What if everyone was calling in singing from the same hymn book and the same tune? It really wouldn't be a program. You have to hear opposing views, you have to hear suggestions. And in a country like Barbados, which just came from election, you will get persons still making comments on those things. So we can't really silence people because we don't necessarily share their views. We have to become a little more tolerant as a society. This is Dr. Brass Stacks. Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Sure, I can.
Okay, thank you. You are a Christian, correct?
I am a believer.
A believer, okay. Do you know what Psalms 27:10?
If I know Psalm 27:10, not off my head.
What it says?
Not off my head, no, I don't.
Okay, it says, when my mother and my father forsake me.
Ooh, one of my favorites.
Then the Lord will take me up.
He will take me up, yes.
Right.
Speaks to abandonment and rejection and comfort in knowing that there's a God who can comfort you amidst even when man leaves you. That's what it speaks
to. Not only man, your own mother and your own father.
Right, that's why it's a man.
No, Black people are familiar with the verse. They're always telling you, the Christians, they're always telling you John 3:16. But I want to remind them, I also say...
But you just read Psalm whatever. You got to say what John 3:16 is.
Pardon me?
You got to say what John 3:16 is if you're making
it. Okay, it says, for God so loved the world mm-hmm. that he gave his only begotten son, mm-hmm. that whosoever believeth in him should not perish but have everlasting life.
Right.
But the same Bible also says, don't mm-hmm. gain the world and lose your soul. Who mm-hmm. has ears to hear, let them hear. Mm-hmm. Now to the Muslims, concerning the Prophet Isa alayhi as-salam, which we call the other name as opposed to the English Jesus, I would like to tell them that the Bible, the Quran says, the only sign or the hadith whichever, the only sign that shall be given them shall be the sign of Jonah in the belly of a whale. Mm-hmm. Now, as you said, it speaks to abandonment, the verse that I mentioned to you earlier. Mm-hmm. I was abandoned at the age of 4 in Barbados on the streets by my mother with a plastic bag of clothes. Mm-hmm. A hawker lady took me, and the following day she took me to the welfare, and I was placed in the custody of a children's home called Bessie Yearwood. Mm-hmm. Now, while I was there, in residence there were several youth groups that used to come and visit us. And one of them was a group called the Dalkeith Methodist Youth Group. So I got to know some persons, you know, as I was growing up. Now, after becoming an adult, I was forced, after leaving the children's home, to go back to an abusive home because at a certain age, you know, you have to leave and you end up going back to the same abusive homes, the majority of children. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Right. So I would have had a nervous breakdown after going through certain experiences. And I ended up having to go on welfare, even though I was very educated and blah, blah, blah. But that's not the point I'm making here. Mm-hmm. Even though I get a little welfare, I still try to help myself because the welfare is small. But I still try to help myself because of the side effects of the drugs. I was on fear in the psychiatric hospital. Mm. And I cannot work to, you know, ably enough like to hold down a 9-to-5 job on a consistent basis.
Okay.
However, and I also have a problem with my right hand. There was an incident where I had some money and I went into a popular supermarket. When I came out of popular supermarket, this guy was hustling me to a taxi. After I placed these 3 bags in the taxi, the guy said to me, "You belong to me," but things did not work out. But that made me do a double take. I stepped back and I looked at him. I said to myself, "I don't know this guy." Mm-hmm. And something prompted me in my spirit to look at the license plate. It was not a licensed taxi. Then another guy said to me, $15 for a taxi. I said, "Look," to myself, "I don't have this amount of money." So I decided I was going to take a chance and lift my groceries home by, you know, with my hand.
Ooh, the same hand that's hurt.
That's hurt. For a whole month, I could not make any jewelry, and I was working around the welfare that they were giving me to pay bills and buy groceries and stuff like that. I called the welfare, a lady. I mean, I'm jeopardizing myself now. I called a lady.
You sure you want to jeopardize yourself?
Mom, let me. Mom, I'm going to do it.
Okay.
I called a lady whom I knew from the time that would have known my situation.
Don't call any names, please.
I'm not calling no names. Thank you, but I just let me flow. I called a lady from the welfare that would have known my situation from the time I was a little girl. Mm. I said to her, you know, I hurt my hand and I've been able to work for a little while. I just want to know if I could get a, they would normally give you $100 that you could go into the supermarket and buy some food. And she asked me all kind of questions. She turned me around. I said, "But I just wonder if I could get $100. She said to me, "Well, I never knew you to be so explosive before." Well, I put down the phone. She called back. I took it up. So the conversation started again. She said, "You are going to get your check this week." I said, "Ma'am, that's all you had to say. You understand me?" And there are women in this country, I don't know that pregnancy is a disability. There are women in this country who go into the welfare office. They get children like it is something out of style. And they take the taxpayers' money. Mm-hmm. Am I making sense, Miss Gail?
I'm hearing you. Let me let you flow. You asked me to let you flow. I'm letting you flow.
So now I ask for some input.
Because if you're making sense.
I am saying that you, in this country, Barbados, it seems the only way that people in Barbados feel for you is if you are willing to fornicate and get children out of wedlock. Mm. As if something is wrong with you, people with legitimate disabilities are unable. And I mean, I am no person. You get where I'm coming from?
I understand where you're coming from, yes.
I try to help myself, but for a month because I hurt my hand.
So did you get the $100?
No, I did not. She said that the check was coming, but I tried to start back working. And God blessed me the other day. You know, God is a great God. And as a Christian, or you say you're a believer, there's a song called Jabez, God Picked Me Still a Prosperous, a Jamaican artist. But let me move on. Mm-hmm. I live in an urban house in Gullyfield Avenue, Bay of St. Michael, the former constituency of the former Prime Minister of Barbados, Frendel Stewart. Frendel Stewart came to this house when he was canvassing. I do not remember the year. And he sat in the house. I prophesied to the Honorable Frendel Stewart that he was going to become Prime Minister of this country. The lady that was campaigning with him, she said to me, "Are you a Christian?" I said, "Yes." She said, "Come and campaign with us." I said, "No." Anyway, I prayed for him. When it was coming close to the time when he was going to become Prime Minister, I went to Luke's Avenue, which was his constituency office. The lady gave me his personal number, and I called him, and I told him, "This is the time that you're going to get the office." Mr. Frendel Stewart never looked back at me. He did say he was trying to find a way that he was going to help me. I found myself in a predicament where I met someone who told me that they were helped by the former administration. Ma'am, if you could see the house that I live in.
All right. So do you want to call me after the program is finished so that we can continue the conversation?
When I say continue the conversation, are you speaking on air for people to hear?
Yes, and I'm asking because you're not going to get help by just putting it on air. So I'm asking if you want to have a conversation after the program is finished. I understand you, but I really want you to, even if you want to leave your number with the producer so that I can continue a conversation with you, because this is not anything that is going to be fixed in any one conversation. So I'm asking if you want to have that engagement further.